overwhelmed by sheer numbers and infected everything. He dreaded them like a plague.
And the Forerunners feared the Flood would overwhelm the galaxy? They should have worried about the humans, too. Did they encounter humans on Earth when they landed and built their artifacts? They should have seen the warning signs.
God didn't make that kind of mistake.
Tel Vadam is not entitled to call himself the Arbiter, Jules said at last. He's a traitor. He'll be overthrown, and then we'll come for you and finish the job we started. Because you'll spread across every planet, just like the Flood, if we don't stop you.
Jules had almost forgotten about the guard standing in front of the door. For a moment, he glanced at the man and noted that he seemed oblivious of the conversation going on at the table, just staring at a point somewhere on the wall facing him. Then he touched his finger to his ear. Jules realized he was listening to something on his radio receiver. The guard moved up behind Magnusson, tapped her on the shoulder, and motioned to her to switch off her translation device. She nodded and spoke with him in quiet English words that Jules couldn't follow, except for two. Sangelios, whose meaning was clear, and hinge heads, which he recognized but still didn't understand. Whatever the guard had told her had made her smile. For a few moments, she twiddled a stylus between her fingers, reading the papers laid out on the table in front of her, and then touched the translation device again.
"Things are getting quite tense on Sangelios," she said. "There's been a bomb attack in one of your cities, and reports of Jirohani attacking Sangeli. I thought that might cheer you up, seeing as you've been planning a revolt."
So, Telkam had made his move. Jules' first thought was worry for Raea, and his second was frustration that he wasn't there to fight.
"As I said, Vadam will be overthrown."
"I should hope so," Magnusson said. "It's costing us a fortune to arm your insurrection." "Yes, your friend Telkam knows he's being bankrolled by Oni. Still, we did get a Huragok out of it."
So I was right, at least partly.
Jules had seen the female shipmaster, the one they called Osman, delivering arms to Telkam, but he hadn't realized the monk had known exactly who he was dealing with. Jules had been so sure that Telkam was being duped. How could a fanatical member of the Abiding Truth strike a deal with the enemy?
Everybody seemed to be abandoning their senses. "What did he offer you in exchange?" Jules asked.
"We agreed to stay out of each other's keeps, so to speak. We help Telkam remove the Arbiter and set up a religious state. You agree to stay away from human territory."
Magnusson was still fidgeting with that stylus, twirling it slowly between her thin, worm-like little human fingers.
"But it's capability that counts, not intent. I'm afraid we have to make sure you can never threaten us again, no matter how many assurances you give us. We're rather unforgiving when it comes to attempted genocide."
Jules should have known better than to expect anything else from humans. They were incapable of giving up their expansionist habits. The Arbiter was a fool, as Jules suspected, and thought he could trust them when they said things would be different. This was exactly what had made Jules join the coup against him.
"We should have wiped you out," Jules said. "We could never coexist in one galaxy."
"But you never got the chance."
Magnusson did one of those tight smiles, the one that showed no fangs but oozed contempt.
"Nor will you ever get one again. I agree with you. One of us has got to go. And my job is to make sure it's not us."
"You've lost hundreds of warships. You can't possibly threaten Sangelius."
"Oh, come now, Jules. You know it won't be that old-fashioned. You're already sliding into civil war for the second time in a year. And we're Oni. We do things differently to Admiral Hood. None of that Nelsonian square-jawed stuff.
The translation software didn't manage to interpret the last few words. Jule heard only the English. Magnuson pushed back from the table and got up to wander around the room. What could he possibly do for her that was of any use, unless this was all a bluff, unless the humans had no intelligence or functioning warships? Then all Jules knew was what Oni seemed to know already. In fact, they knew more than he did. For a moment, he found himself distracted by the idea that the Forerunners could have built stars. That dwarfed the technology of the Halo Array. Millennia later, no civilization had even come close to that. What else had these not-gods been able to do?
"I don't like the food here," he said, changing the subject. "It upsets my digestion."
"The more you tell us about your native foods, the more I'll be able to get supplies that suit you. I thought you were satisfied with the meat."
"I am. But the grain gives me gas."
"Wheat, you mean?"
"Yes. The grain the Kig-Yar grow. That's a Sangheili crop. Can you not acquire some of that?"
Magnuson smiled again and sat down.
"I never saw you people as farmers."
"We're not. The San Shium kept us supplied, and what farms we still had were maintained by alien labor."
"So you're having to learn to take care of yourselves again. No hired help in the fields. No Huragok to build and repair machines for you."
Jules felt a little mocked.
"We are, and we are succeeding," he said, indignant.
Could this creature survive without the trappings of technology she didn't understand?
"And my wife believes self-reliance is the key to regaining our military greatness."
Magnuson just nodded.
"We'll find some of that grain for you. What's it called?"
"The Kig-Yar name is Irukan."
She pressed the end of her stylus, making it click, and pushed it across the table to him with a sheet of paper.
"Give me a shopping list."
Again, the translation failed.
"Write down a list of common foods. I'll do what I can."
Jules fumbled with the stylus. It was short and slender, far too small for Sangheili hands.